prepare for a true revolution.
Actually, you can't prove God exists.
Questioning tradition, because what you've been taught isn't always true.
The truth will set you free.
Welcome to Truth Revolution, where faith and reason coexist. I am Dave. With me is Pastor Jeff of Revolution Church.
I'm glad to be back here in the studio.
I know you are.
Just got back from a trip to the East Coast again.
The jet setter.
You know what ticks me off about Pennsylvania?
What? That it's like right next to
Their
Jersey?
Speed limits are slow.
Are they?
Out here in Kansas, and this is maybe true for a lot of these eastern states. You guys out there, your speed limits on the highway are like 55.
They are?
It is... I go insane. There was one highway, a two-lane highway. Uh-huh. The speed limit was 45.
What? Is this like out in the middle of nowhere?
Guys, I got to tell you, in Kansas, our speed limit on the freeway is 75. Okay, right. We can actually go places. Right.
Well, here's the thing. Up, over in the East Coast, there's a lot of stuff. Out here, there's nothing.
Well, we can
want to get through Kansas
longer.
As fast as you can.
Jeez.
Get you know what I'm saying?
Anyway, today I'm glad to be back and in the studio where I don't have to drive 45 miles an hour. We can go 1,000 miles an hour here. So we're going to be moving today. Today we're talking about the vertical cosmological argument.
Wow.
This is going to be an argument to prove the existence of God.
Right.
And we've got three listener questions I want to try to get to today.
Wow.
And a Bible contradiction. So, Dave.
Yeah.
Does God exist?
Yeah, he does. Case closed.
Well, we want this show to be open to people who don't believe God exists.
Right.
Right. We want this to be a place where they can send in questions, they can challenge us. But we have a little thought for them right now.
Mm-hmm.
We would like to show you a reason we think God exists. This is called vertical cosmological argument. Usually when we're talking cosmological argument, and don't get confused by the big language here, right? Usually when we talk about cosmological argument, we're talking about the Kalam cosmological argument that says the universe began to exist.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, everything began to exist. The universe began to exist. And because it began to exist, someone had to make it begin.
Right.
Okay? That would be God. All right? That's the Kalam cosmological argument, really, basically. Now, this is going to be a little different. This isn't talking about the start of the universe. This is talking about the fact that God continues to keep the universe going. He sustains the universe.
Right.
Otherwise, it would cease to exist.
Right. And that's exactly what the Bible tells us.
We would just...
Right.
Be done.
I don't even think it'd be that.
You don't even think, you think we'd just like float apart?
No. I just think it would be like, it wouldn't even make a sound.
Yeah.
It would just be.
We would just be done.
Yeah. It'd be like turning off a radio.
Well, that's boring.
Not even the click.
We would just stop to exist. Everything would stop existing.
Yeah.
All right. Well.
It'd be that quick.
Now, here's the deal. Both of these arguments are important, right? The Kalam's mm-hmm. important because if it's right, that means God began the universe.
Right.
But it doesn't answer much about our lives today. I mean, it proved the universe began, but it doesn't mean he interacts with us right now at all.
Right. So what you're saying is it proves that God had a vested interest at the very beginning, and maybe he got bored and
maybe he's done. Maybe he's a deistic God, right. or some people say a deistic God,
right.
Where he just
very far off.
He wound up the clock and mm-hmm. let it go. The universe is just going on its own now. But this proves not only did God start it, but that he upholds it. He has to have his fingers in creation, keeping it going all the time.
Right.
All right, so you're ready for this? Here's the logic.
Okay, hit me.
Number one.
All right.
Everything in the universe is dependent upon something else. I'm going to read these, and then we're going to explain each one of them, okay?
Right.
Number one, everything in the universe is dependent upon something else.
Right.
Number two, if everything's dependent, then the whole universe together is dependent.
Right.
Therefore, number three, therefore, the whole universe is dependent upon some independent being beyond the universe for its current existence.
Aha.
In other words,
where you're going.
Yeah, our universe has to be dependent upon something outside of it.
Right.
Otherwise, it would stop to exist. Because our universe is made up of things that are dependent. And you can't put dependent things together and then suddenly come up with something that doesn't need anything else.
So basically, what we'd have to do to disprove this would be to come up with something that's independent within our universe.
Let's think of one.
I am independent. I live in the United States.
No, Dave. You're single. That's different.
Well, wait a minute.
Oh! Burn!
Well, you know, I don't live in my mom's basement anymore.
No, that's very good.
I'm independent.
Anymore? Did you ever?
Yeah. Well, no. Oh, that's okay. She never had a basement.
All right. But let's look at number one. Let's look at each of these individually, because all three of them have to be true.
Right.
All right. Number one says,
everything in the universe is dependent upon something else.
Okay. Is that true? Let's just think of things. Okay. Is a baby dependent?
Yes.
What is a baby dependent upon?
Their mother. Actually, a ton of stuff.
Yeah.
But most ultimately, their mom or the air they breathe.
Yes, the air.
You know? And so I'd have to scratch myself off that list because I need air.
Okay, so we are dependent. Mm-hmm. Okay, that baby can stop now. Babies are dependent. You're dependent because you need water.
Right.
So we're seeing all these living things are dependent. What about scissors?
Scissors are dependent on the manufacturer.
Oh, okay. Well, what about a rock?
A rock is dependent on bigger rocks, are they not?
Okay, that's true. What about like the biggest rocks? Those are dependent upon even like molecules.
Yes, they are. That's true.
And those molecules are dependent upon atoms, and those atoms are dependent upon the strong and weak nuclear forces. Right. You just keep going.
I was going to say, what about the biggest stars like Betelgeuse? You know, that's an actual star, Jeff.
That's the name of a star?
Yes, it is. It's huge.
I didn't even know that.
But you started talking about molecular structure and stuff like that, and atoms actually interacting with each other. And then that totally blew my argument out of the sky.
Oh, because
Betelgeuse just ceased to exist.
wait, explain that more, because you were going to say once they started interacting, then they...
You brought up the fact that atoms are... that things are dependent upon the things that make them up.
Yes.
Such as atoms.
Yes.
And molecules and stuff like that. And the fact that they have to interact.
Yeah.
And cause a reaction that would cause the nuclear reaction to make a star burn.
Right, right. Yeah, exactly. I mean, even inside an atom, you know, the electron is reliant upon the nucleus. I mean, you can't have one without the other and have a real atom.
Right.
And so everything in the universe is dependent upon something. There's not anything in our universe that exists apart from something else completely.
Right. There you go.
All right. Now, that's the first line. So, and generally, everybody agrees with that.
Okay.
Number two is where things get tricky. But before we go to number two, let's do our Bible contradiction.
Oh, Bible contradiction.
You, sir, are the master of the cliffhanger. Bible contradiction today, brought to you by the fine folks over at infidels.org.
Yahoo!
What'd you say?
Woo!
Oh. How many apostles were in office between the resurrection and the ascension? I didn't know they had an office.
Yeah, it was on the corner of camel and desert.
All right, check it out. 1 Corinthians 15:5 says that there were 12, okay? It says that he appeared to Cephas, who is Peter, and then to the 12. Matthew 27:3-5 was basically where Judas was remorseful and committed suicide, which then made it 11.
11 disciples.
Yes.
Apostles.
Acts 1:9-26. Well, Matthias was not elected until after the resurrection, they said.
Okay.
To make 12 again. And then Matthew 28:16, then the 11 disciples went to Galilee to the mountain where Jesus told them to go. That makes 11.
Oh.
So we got to... discrepancy, 11 or 12, what was it?
Okay, so they're saying Matthias wasn't elected until after Jesus ascended.
Well, they're saying...
so there would be 11 apostles when Jesus ascended.
Right.
But they think that 1 Corinthians 15 says there was 12 apostles when Jesus ascended.
Right.
Well, here's the deal.
Tell me the deal.
The C in our cracked acronym, the second C, stands for credibility. And you have to. You absolutely have to read the Bible and assume that these writers know what they're talking about, because then you're going to dig in more than just the surface things. All they did here was they saw, hey, here was 12, and in a different verse, now there's 11. Ha, the Bible contradicts itself.
Right.
That's all they did. They did no further reading whatsoever.
All right.
That's why this is so important, to give credibility.
Calm down and take a breath.
I can't.
Okay.
Okay, in 1 Corinthians 15, it says that Jesus appeared to Peter and the 12. This does not say that Jesus appeared to Peter and the 12 before the ascension, but after Judas.
Right.
It just says that he did. So apparently Jesus appeared to the 12 even when Matthias was part of them.
Okay.
When he had been elected. That's one possible thing. The other possible thing is that Matthias was there with the apostles. He hadn't been elected yet. And then later on, they're writing about it and they're talking about it. And they say, well, yeah, Jesus appeared to the 12. Well, they're not trying to say that he had already been elected. They're just saying, well, yeah, Matthias was there.
Highly likely that Matthias was there.
Probably very likely that he was there. And so, but the most interesting part is that 1 Corinthians 15, it's a creed. This book of Corinthians was written by Paul, mm-hmm. but this part of Corinthians probably wasn't written by Paul. It was probably a creed that they recited verbally that was written 2 to 5 years after Jesus.
Like a memory verse.
Yeah, like they all recited this creed. Mm-hmm. They knew it. It was a common thing that they said to each other. And, you know, he appeared to Peter and then to the 12. And like there's this whole little paragraph there.
Right.
And so it's they were not trying to give a historical timeline. They're trying to give facts and data that you should remember. Jesus did appear to the disciples. Mm-hmm. They're not giving you a timeline. Although, as we pointed out, Matthias could have been there, probably was there. He was one of the 12. And so even though they referenced the 12, Matthias was part of the 12. It doesn't matter. All they're doing is they're not giving any credit whatsoever to the Bible writers. They're trying to find some nitpicking little tiny thing that might look bad and saying there's a problem, but it's not a problem. They're just nitpicking. You got to say, look, this writer, he's recording history. He probably knows whether Matthias was there or not.
Right.
We don't know whether Matthias was there or not, but he says he was. So we have to trust that he really was. You can't just say, well, I wasn't there, but I know Matthias wasn't.
Right.
That doesn't make any sense. That's the answer for a contradiction.
Bible contradiction.
So we would appreciate it, infidels.org, next time if you tried a little harder.
Just give the Bible some credit. Right. Dig in. We love answering these, but I get a little annoyed when they're so just...
nitpicky?
Well, yeah, when they just don't even give the Bible credit. Right.
They don't do any research at all.
Like I know that the book Acts says Matthias was there, but I'm going to assume that he wasn't there.
Right.
Even though the other verses don't say he was either. I mean, anyway. Back to the vertical cosmological argument. Line one, everything in the universe is dependent upon something else. Line two, if everything's dependent, then the whole universe together is dependent. And this is the line that people have problems with.
Right.
Okay. Is it true that if everything's dependent, then the whole universe must be dependent upon something outside of it?
Well, you have to make that leap, because if everything is dependent, then what is independent?
Well, exactly.
You know?
Exactly. I want you to, wherever you're at, look at the room you're in.
Okay.
If you painted half the walls of that room green and half the walls white, what color would the room be?
Green and white.
Essentially. Right? All right, I'm speaking colloquially here, right?
Okay.
It'd be green and white. If we painted every single wall in that room orange, what color would the room be?
Orange.
Thank you. Since all the walls are orange, it is an orange room.
Right.
All right, this is what we're talking about. Every single thing in the universe is dependent, so the universe is dependent. It's really that simple.
So you're saying that the orange room is dependent on the room being orange, painted
on the
orange.
Walls being orange.
Right.
If every surface in a room is orange, then that room is orange.
Otherwise, it wouldn't be an orange room.
Right.
Okay.
And what we're saying is every person, every animal, every object is dependent. There's not anything in the universe that's totally, completely independent. Okay. And so when you put them together, the entire universe is also dependent. And since the universe contains everything that exists, something outside the universe would be the only thing that could sustain it. Because when you put dependent things together, they're still dependent upon something.
Right, but can't you have two things that are dependent on each other?
That's the question we're going to answer when we get back.
Okay.
Because some people say, well, just because you got some parts of things, when you put them together, it makes something different.
Right.
You know, maybe you got some dependent things in the universe, but you put them together and they work. You know, like the hydrological cycle or all that sort of thing. So we're going to talk about that when we get back. Is the universe capable of sustaining itself? All right. And also, we got some listener questions we're going to try to get to.
Yes.
We're going to try to get three of them. Ha! Good luck, Dave.
We'll get it. What are you telling me? We'll get there.
All right. And get over to truthrevolution.tv and Revolution Church. Revolution Church would love to have you here.
Right. If you're in Salina, you need to get here. 9 and 11 on Sunday mornings.
Every Sunday morning, Revolution Church, whatever you're dressed like, come on out right now. Hey, this is Pastor Jeff from Revolution Church.
And I'm Dave. You know, God cares more about what's on the inside of a person than the outside.
That's right. Join us Sunday morning at 9 or 11 a.m. Check out SalinaRevolution.com.
What if someone had never been to church before?
Most people here hadn't been for a long time, if ever, so you'll fit in fine.
What to wear? Just be yourself. Jeans, t-shirt, tats, whatever.
Revolution Church, Sunday morning, 9 or 11 a.m.
SalinaRevolution.com or check us out on Facebook.
SalinaRevolution.com.
Revolution!
Hi, this is Pastor Jeff from Revolution Church. Not only am I the host of the Truth Revolution radio program, but I'm also a foster parent. Did you know that there are only 20 or 30 children in Salina that need to be adopted right now? Did you know that there are children in foster care who want to live in Salina, but are sometimes placed in other towns because we don't have enough foster homes here? I want to challenge you to consider foster care today. If you're interested in doing foster care, go to kfapa.com. That's K-F-A-P-A, as in the Kansas Foster and Adoptive Parent Association.com. K-F-A-P-A.com, and get more information. You can request information, email and ask any questions you want, or possibly even sign up to take a class about foster parenting. It's easier and more difficult than you'd ever imagine, but it's also more rewarding than you'd ever imagine. Consider fostering and helping a child in need today.
Truth Shots from TruthRevolution.tv and Revolution Church. Here's your host, Dave, and Pastor Jeff.
Does God know everything?
A certain group of theologians are now suggesting that God only knows some of everything.
Confused? Well, they say God knows everything that is possible to know, but since your free will choices haven't been made yet, he doesn't know those.
But biblically, it certainly seems like there's no limit to God's knowledge, not even theoretical limits.
Indeed, Psalm 147 says, "Great is our Lord and mighty in power. His understanding has no limit."
No limit. There's no caveat to that statement. And 1 John 3 says, "For God is greater than our hearts, and he knows everything."
In John 21, Peter said to Jesus, "Lord, you know all things."
Jesus knows all things.
Certainly open theists are trying hard to reconcile free will with God's power and knowledge. We commend them for that.
But until now, no theologian for thousands of years has promoted such a view. It seems unlikely that in 2014, we'd finally figure out what everyone else had wrong about God.
TruthRevolution.tv.
Did you know that Truth Revolution is supported by Revolution Church and listeners like you?
It takes quite a bit of time and money to produce a quality radio show.
If you find Truth Revolution helpful, a donation would be a powerful way to make sure the message keeps going out.
This ministry is doing more than Dave and I imagined it would at the beginning.
You got that right.
And as we grow, we want to keep the goal the same: to be the place where faith and reason meet.
Donations are accepted at www.truthrevolution.tv or Revolution Church.
Truth Revolution.
The vertical cosmological arguments.
I am dependent upon pizza for my existence.
Sometimes you are.
I am. Oftentimes dependent upon pizza for my existence.
Right.
That's what we're talking about today.
I think you're more dependent on popcorn, Jeff.
That is true. I ate popcorn today.
Yeah.
I ate popcorn 2 days ago.
For those that don't know, Jeff is a popcorn connoisseur.
I may eat popcorn tonight. I make better popcorn than the movie theaters. The popcorn's dependent upon me.
All right.
I'm not dependent on the popcorn.
Let's get back.
All right. Number one, vertical cosmological argument, everything in the universe is dependent upon something else. All right. Everything's dependent. Number two, since everything's dependent, our whole universe is dependent, right? If you painted every room or every surface in a room orange,
it would be an orange room.
It'd be an orange room.
It wouldn't be white.
Right. If everything in there is orange, then the room is orange. And if everything in our universe is dependent, it needs something else, then our universe needs something else outside of our universe.
Right. Well, before the break, we started talking about what happens if maybe there are two things that are independent, you know, are dependent on each other, that make them independent together.
Yeah, exactly. Like, if, you know, what about...
I can't think of anything.
But well, people often use triangles to prove their point, okay? They say a triangle has three sides.
Right.
But when you put two triangles together, they're different. Now you have a square with four sides.
Or a diamond.
Yeah, and this means, they argue, that the universe might not be dependent upon something else, because when you put things together, sometimes they aren't the same as they used to be.
All right. But
so they say sometimes you can take all these dependent things and put them together and they might not be dependent anymore.
Well, wait a minute. I kind of see where you're going.
Okay.
Because, you put two triangles together to make a square.
Yes.
That square is still dependent on two triangles, and then we go back to where the two triangles are still dependent on
another thing. That square is still dependent upon triangles. That's a good one. I haven't actually thought about it that way. I would bring it back even one step, though.
Okay.
I don't want to dismiss what you just said. Okay. I think that's genius. All right. It still is dependent. No matter how you slice it, you put those two triangles together and they make a square.
Right.
That square still is dependent on those triangles. Right. But let's bring back even another step. Being dependent upon something, it is a fundamental attribute. It doesn't necessarily, it's not the same thing as your definition. If we change, our fundamental attributes don't change. Okay, what this means is that being dependent doesn't make us human beings, but we are always dependent. Okay, let me explain this.
Okay.
A fundamental attribute is an attribute that's so elementary to an object that that object will retain that attribute if you pair it with something that has a similar fundamental attribute.
Okay.
It's part of the nature of that object.
All right, so say I have human DNA.
Yes.
You pair me with another human that has human DNA.
You're going to get a human, right. No matter how different that human looks or acts. Okay. A definition is something that outlines an object's state of being. Okay. Here's an example. A G.I. Joe's definition is a toy soldier.
Right.
But if you use that to pretend to marry Barbie, now its definition as a soldier is meaningless. But its fundamental attribute is a toy.
Right.
So when you place it with other toys, it's always a toy, even if it's not a toy soldier anymore.
But what if you use it as a hammer?
Then it's going to break. But you get my point, right? There's something that's more fundamental about G.I. Joe than even toy soldier.
Okay.
What's more fundamental? Just a toy.
Right.
Right. And so there's something more fundamental to a triangle than having three sides. What's more fundamental than that? It's a shape. So when you put a triangle with another triangle, it makes a square, right? You've changed its definition, but have you changed its fundamental attribute?
Still a shape.
No, it's still a shape.
Right.
Understanding that when we put one thing that's dependent with another thing that's dependent, that is a fundamental attribute. It is being dependent is so fundamental to who we are that will never change about us.
Right.
No matter how much pizza I eat, I'm always going to need something else.
Right.
So when you put two things that have that fundamental attribute of being dependent together, they are still dependent.
Mm-hmm.
And so it doesn't matter how many dependent things you have, they're still going to be dependent.
Well, sometimes they're even more dependent.
That's right. You
like can a room full of babies.
You put a baby in a forest, right? It's dependent. It needs stuff.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't matter if you put another baby or 5,000 babies with it.
Hey, what,
it has not become less
what's
dependent.
Going on here?
It has become more dependent.
Where do these babies come from?
When you put more dependent things with each other, they are simply more dependent. They are not less dependent at all.
I'm dependent on some sanity right now.
So it's true. When you put dependent things together, they just become more dependent, not less dependent. Mm-hmm. And so there's something outside of our universe that is holding this universe together. Otherwise, we would cease to exist because our universe needs something. It's dependent upon something outside of itself to continue to exist.
Right. So we've proven point one.
Yeah.
And I think we just proved point two.
Yes. And number three, therefore, this is the conclusion.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to prove it. It's just a conclusion. Therefore, the whole universe is dependent upon some independent being beyond the universe for its current existence. And that is what we call God. Now, we're going to get to a question.
Okay. I got a question.
All right. Question number one.
Question number one. If a text like the end of a mark can make...
End of the book of Mark, not a mark.
Okay. If a text like the ending of Mark can make it into scripture, then how can we say God is guiding this book? How can we say it is all inspired? How do we know if other texts in or out of the Bible are really inspired or not?
Okay.
If we say the ending of Mark shouldn't be there, then what else in the Bible shouldn't be there?
All right. Mark 16:8. Says, trembling, bewildered, the women went out and fled from the tomb. They said nothing to anyone because they were afraid.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's this weird note right after that.
Right. It says, the earliest manuscripts and some other ancient witnesses do not have verses 9 through 20.
Right. Verses 9 through 20 in your
What's
Bible
up with that?
Aren't all in there in the earliest manuscripts. And the interesting thing is, this is a fact that we freely admit. And it points to the integrity of Scripture. We're like, we're not sure verses 9 through 20 were in the original Bible. So right. we're just going to put a note there because it was in some of the old manuscripts, but not the earliest
right. one. It's not like it's something that the Bible is trying to hide.
Right. And here's the reason we keep it in there. Mark writes in A-B style. He starts with A, a problem, and then B, a resolution. He does mm-hmm. this, all, just look in his book. He does it all the time. He starts with a problem, and then he resolves it. And he writes in verse 8,
Vanilla ice.
Trembling and bewildered, the women went out and fled from the tomb. They said nothing to anyone because they were afraid. Does that sound like Mark's going to end his book that way?
No.
That's a problem.
He needs resolution.
He's going to resolve that, mm-hmm. okay? And so there was something else that Mark wrote at the end of his book.
Right.
We don't necessarily know exactly what it was. I think probably verses 9 through 20 were the scribes' best guess based on oral tradition. And so that's how that got put back in there. Now, if this is the case, how can we say God's guiding it? Well, that's a very ethereal question. How do we know God is guiding it? I think a more important question is, do we know what was originally written? And the answer is, we do. With the one exception of verses 9 through 20 in Mark.
Right.
And we note that. And so we're really talking about manuscript authority here, which you should go back and listen to our show, How Was the Bible Put Together, from June 15th, 2014, to get the rest of this question answered. Let's go to the next question.
All right, question goes like this. If 666 is considered evil,
yes.
does that mean that 25.8069 is the root of all evil?
What? That is hilarious. Yeah, because 25.8 is the square root of yeah. 666. But nice. It brings up a good point. You know, okay. people interpret the weirdest stuff from the Bible.
Yeah.
Today, Dave, on Christian radio, I heard someone say that the immigrant crisis at the border was a spiritual battle and a sign of the end of the world, biblically.
Hmm.
No. Wow. No, it's not.
Wow.
That's akin to suggesting that 25.8069 is the root of all evil.
Right.
Right. They're taking little pieces from the Bible and blowing it up and attaching all kinds of unnecessary information to it. I mean, that's just completely ridiculous. They take these little verse like Matthew 24:6, where Jesus says, you'll hear of wars and rumors of wars.
Oh, but there are.
But see to it that you're not alarmed. Such things must happen for the end is to come. And they go, there's a war. There's a rumor of war. There's people coming over our border. And
they've been doing that for hundreds of years.
Actually, they've been doing that for... not hundreds, but like 150.
Okay.
I won't go into that right now. But never mind, Jesus said, do not be alarmed, right? Never mind that this was fulfilled almost 2,000 years ago.
Right.
Anyway, so let's go to our last listener question for today and see if we have time.
Wow, going to knock out three.
Yeah. All right.
I got a question.
All right, question is church a building or can it be a group of believers that get together and worship?
All right, let's be clear. There's this thing as the universal church, you know, all people right. worshiping whenever, wherever, however. But primarily the church is local. All right, I counted Bible verses that refer to the church as local. There's 53 verses
okay.
that clearly are local. There's only 16 verses that are talking about a universal ethereal church. So really, the church is a local gathering of people. That word ekklesia is the Greek word for mm-hmm. church. And in his book, Ekklesia, Tom Nelson writes, the Greek word for church here is ekklesia. Ecclesia was used widely in extra-biblical literature of the day to describe a public gathering, an assembly of people summoned by a herald or town crier. Here in Matthew chapter 16, Jesus employs this word and attaches to it a special significance, God's redemptive community. In other words, religious communities did not use the word ecclesia until Jesus started doing that. Those were basically business meetings.
Ah.
If you were at the business meeting and doing work, you were ecclesia. So church is not like, it's just people. I am a church. It's not what it is. The church is a group of people. Okay. It's a local gathering mm-hmm. of Christians in a specific spot.
Right. Doing work.
Committed to each other
right.
and meeting together to do the important business, the right. important work of God. That's what church is. Okay. So our local church, it's the place where and the people who come together to actively serve God and speak about God and experience God's grace and tell people about Jesus.
Right.
That's what it is. It's both the place where and the people who. Okay, it's both. All right. Thanks for listening to Truth Revolution. TruthRevolution.tv is where we have past shows, Truth Shots, every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday.
You want to get there.
It's a really great site. We love it because it's awesome. Well,
We never thought we'd be doing it this long.
Anyway, you got to get there. Send us some questions. We did three of them today. I want to do some more next week. And we got Greg Kuchel coming in a couple weeks from now
uh-huh.
from Stand to Reason. So he's really going to be a good show in a couple weeks from now. Hope you guys will get out to Revolution Church. At least look us up online. You can watch live online if you're not in Salina.
Yep.
Or if you want to look at us before you come in physically. So Revolution Church in Salina, Kansas. Also go to truthrevolution.tv. Send in a question. Consider donating. Help us out. Truthrevolution.tv.
See you next week.